Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competition.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had balls, she'd be my granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's right.
Look, I love a good pun.
Okay. Read it.
I'm reading this out under duress. It's no, a text in from Gary.
This is good.
We tweeted this text. On the boxing discussion we just had, Gary wonders, is this boxing expert you have on, Anne Dealey, any relation to the lovely Cat Dealey? No. Hey, look, Gary, we appreciate the effort.
I like it.
Any man who can text in a joke.
Richie's into that, isn't he? Yeah.
They loved it outside. I mean, I'm ridiculing you. Ridicule is a strong word. I think it's not bad, Gary. Not for me. It's not bad. It's been tweeted, though. Mission accomplished. The lads loved it inside.
Hashtag numbers.
You know, a lot of people going to see that, Gary, your work tonight.
Oh, it's a goal for Leicester! Shinji Okazaki. 25 minutes to go at the King Power. Liverpool have had the better of this game, and the Japanese strikers just put Leicester 1-0 up.
Mm. Gary's joke is growing on me, actually, the more I look at it.
Oh, for God's sake.
And
you can't keep going back to it.
And Dealey. It's like I'm 5 minutes behind everyone laughing at this.
No, I'm sorry.
Did you not get that start?
Oh, I didn't get it at the start.
Oh, Christ.
Come on.
I'm ashamed.
Are you serious?
I'm ashamed to admit.
Didn't get that?
I googled Anne Dealey. It's like, who is this Anne Dealey?
Oh my god.
If you look at my Google now, it says Anne Dealey boxing.
Oh my God. Joe.
Three-time PPI winner and all that, you know.
You've let yourself, it's not going to be four, I'll tell you that much.
Tommy outside just said in my ear, he did it too.
What?
Ah, well.
Tommy's 12, I kind of forgive it, yeah. But you know.
I've been concentrating a lot all day, I'm tired.
I hope whatever Tommy said into my ears there didn't bleed into the microphone, by the way.
No, it didn't.
It's so good, yeah.
So we've done our Anne Dealey joke, and now you're bringing us up to date.
Cat Dealey, Anne Dealey. In the Carabao Cup, the latest scores.
Oh, Andy Lee?
No. Go on.
As you mentioned, Shinji Okazaki's just given Leicester the lead at home to Liverpool. Liverpool had the better of that game. They substituted Philippe Coutinho for Ben Woodburn at half time in that one as well. Did Jurgen Klopp and co. Elsewhere, Middlesbrough 1-0 up away to Aston Villa. It's Patrick Bamford who's gotten the goal from Middlesbrough tonight. In fact, he's just made it 2-0. And Tommy Elphick's been sent off for Villa in that one as well. They're down to 10 men. Mario Vlancic scored twice for Norwich. The first of those in the penalty spot. They're 2-0 up away to Brentford. Wes Hoolihan started for Norwich tonight. Brentford also missing a penalty in that game. Bristol City on the verge of a shock. They're now leading Stoke City by 2-0 at Ashton Gate. Famara Diedu and Matt Taylor with the goals for the Robins there. Burnley leads still scoreless at Turf Moor. Palace are 1-0 up at home to Huddersfield. Bakary Sakho separating the sides there. West Ham 2-0 up at home to Bolton. It's Angelo Ogbonna and Diafra Sakho have gotten the goals for them. Wolves, Bristol Rovers, Reading and Swansea, Tottenham and Barnsley all still scoreless. The Republic of Ireland women are on the verge of opening up their World Cup qualifying campaign with a win. They're 2-0 up away to Northern Ireland. It's Megan Campbell who's had a hand in both of the goals. She scored the second one with a cross-come shot, and her throw-in, a Mick McCarthy-esque throw-in, it has to be said, from Campbell earlier on, just in the stroke of half-time, was headed in to her own net by Rachel Furness, the Northern Irish midfielder. So it's 2-0 to Colin Bell's side in that one. On the continent tonight, plenty of action there too. In La Liga, Barcelona and Eibar are still scoreless after 10 minutes. Valencia have beaten Malaga by 5-0. A hat-trick for Simone Zaza inside 8 minutes for the Italian striker, helping Valencia to a 5-0 victory at home to Malaga. Where indeed? Bayern Munich 3-0 up away to Schalke in the Bundesliga. Arturo Vidal's just gotten the latest one of those. Wolfsburg and Werder Bremen are 1 each. Divock Origi, the Liverpool on-loan striker, scoring for Wolfsburg there. Finn Bartels equalising for Bremen. Mönchengladbach 2-0 up at home to Stuttgart. Augsburg 1-0 up at home to RB Leipzig. So they are, Joe.
Still plenty of love coming in for Correspondent. You can podcast the interview if you didn't catch it. Cora says Chief Brody needs to be a regular in the show. I'm sat in the Tesco car park listening to her interview and I've forgotten half the stuff I came down for. Gotta make a list. And Andy Lee.
Cat Dealey.
Andy Lee with a blue tick beside his name. Oh dear.
Joel, come on.
Andy Lee has just tweeted us, Kevin.
The Joel becomes funny because you didn't get it. Do you know that?
For the record,
Andy Lee boxing.
What a dope.
Andy Lee boxing. I can't believe that's your Google search.
Oh,
who is she? Was she a judge like Adelaide Bird?
No.
Alright, come on.
Seriously.
Go on, Andy Lee, what she said.
Yeah.
Alright, stop.
Has he put his score up?
Yes.
Is that what you want to try and get out here?
Oh, God. Come on. Okay.
This pun doesn't deserve this, by the way. Can I just point that out?
Oh.
It was all right. It was worthy of a tweet. I never thought we'd be here.
All right, come on. Stop. Right, okay. Andy Lee was in touch. And he says, Richie, stop. For the record.
Has he actually retweeted that himself? I'd like to think that deserves probably a retweet then, doesn't it?
He actually can't read.
He had it 4 rounds each with 4 rounds shared. That was how he got a draw. He's tweeted us.
Right.
No relation to Anne.
Anne.
I'm gone.
Cat.
Okay. Right, stop. Let's put this behind us. Okay. He's got to get this together because people who are listening to the podcast are going to be like, what are these laughing about when they hear the football show out of context?
Leave it all in.
Be hyenas. Okay. Football show.
Off the ball. On News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Here we are, Kev. Football show.
Here we go. You're back on it now, aren't you?
The Carabao Cup. Yeah. Third round. Always a big night in the English league calendar.
Classic material tonight. Leicester got in front here. Leicester 1-0 up.
On Liverpool. Coutinho started for Liverpool this evening. He's gone off at half time.
Yeah.
On the show this evening, Philippe Auclair will talk to us about the situation at PSG. You'll have seen, I'm sure, Cavani, Neymar, Dani Alves, and their Le Clash is what it says on the front page of L'Équipe. It's where Dani Alves and Neymar are ganging up on Cavani, frankly. They're taking the ball off him when he wants to take the free kick. He's been taking penalties for a long time. Neymar has basically said, those days are over, Cavani. And the manager has pretty much said, well, they'll sort it out between themselves. I'm going to leave them at it. So Cavani is kind of helpless and outnumbered here. This is what's going on at PSG at the weekend, and it is the talk of France. So Philippe Auclair will talk to us about it.
It's an amazing situation, really, isn't it? And I just feel with what's happened this summer, given the lengths they went to get Neymar at that club, what will inevitably happen? You just know, don't you?
Cavani's out the door in January.
Well, he's a dead man walking, isn't he? Let's be fair.
We'll go to Philippe in just a few moments. One interesting anecdote from the weekend: we were doing the Sunday paper review, which is still available for podcast as ever. And Daniel Taylor, who always writes one of the best football pieces you'll read every week in the Observer on a Sunday, was writing about Wayne Rooney. He was returning to Old Trafford. I suppose this is in the context of Wayne Rooney banned for driving from 2 years in the last 24 hours, pleaded guilty to being almost 3 times over the limit, described it all as a terrible mistake. He's not perfect, Wayne Rooney. He's not a black and white, good or bad character. And so Daniel Taylor, this was all pre the drink driving charge, but Daniel Taylor was talking about Rooney, and one of the great things he did at Old Trafford, just a small story, I'd never ever heard this before. So this was when Rooney first arrived at the club, and the situation at Manchester United up until 2007 when Ken Merritt left as club secretary was that the coaches, when Manchester United would win the league, would receive a few hundred euro as a bonus, a few hundred pounds sterling obviously, as a bonus, rather than a piece of silverware that I suppose would have felt priceless, rather than a medal. Medal would have cost £1,000 per coach. So, I mean, that has changed down the back of the couch for Manchester United. And Ferguson, who preaches about staff and everything else, didn't deem fit to pay the £1,000 to get the backroom coaching staff medals. So one evening, Rooney was talking to Tony Cotton, the former goalkeeping coach, and to Mike Phelan, the first team coach. And Rooney is said to have quipped to the lads, another one for the collection, eh, lads, as they were celebrating winning the 07 league. And Tony Cotton's telling the story here to Daniel Taylor. And he says, we told Rooney about Mr. Merritt's medal policy, Merritt being the club secretary. Rooney was outraged, Cotton recalls. And this is in 07 when Rooney was a young man. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe a club like Manchester United could be so small-time when it came to sharing out the spoils. Daniel Taylor then writes, when all the relevant people came back from the summer, on the very first day of pre-season training, there were identical packages waiting for Cotton and Phelan on their desks at the training ground. Nothing strange there. Every day a supply of deliveries arrived at Carrington from sponsors and sportswear manufacturers offering freebies and all kinds of other perks. But these boxes were especially heavy. Inside, each contained a solid silver replica of the Premier League trophy, together with a note advising that they were worth £5,000 for insurance purposes. All courtesy of Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
Great story.
Very good. Mm. Very good, yeah. It is great.
A young man you came across, obviously.
Yeah, he was. Wayne wasn't a bad lad at all. You know, he's done things as well that hasn't come across great, and he's done things he regrets, as you know, as he has said this week. But that's the sort of lad that I would have known as a young 17, 18 year old boy before he moved to Man United. He does, you know, he certainly thought about the people around the management staff. That was the one thing. Even as a kid, even at Everton, he was more than aware of. And I think because Duncan Ferguson was a big influence on him in that respect, Duncan was very much like that. Duncan was the sort of lad that would have wanted to protect the staff around the manager, looked after them, you know, take them for a meal at Christmas, go give them money to go out and have a meal together and things like this. And I think Wayne was brought up certainly with that sort of mentality as well. So certainly can see that from him, most definitely, yeah.
It's nice from Ferguson. Duncan, that is.
Yeah.
A recognition that the staff, and it must be difficult for staff in some respects, to be so close to...
I was surprised at this one, certainly with Tony Colton and Mike Phelan. They were very, you know, very tight with Ferguson, weren't they? Really, really tight with him, it would seem, anyway.
A big part of the picture there.
Yeah.
But nice of Duncan Ferguson to understand. I often think for club staff, the kit man, the coach, they always talk about the tea lady and the receptionist and all this kind of stuff. They're within touching distance constantly of people probably more than half their ages sometimes, who are multi-millionaires.
I think it would have been something I would have been quite conscious of as well. If we were any sort of bonuses and things like this as well, particularly when I got a little bit older, we would always try to make sure whether or not we do. There is always, you'll always see the players, won't you, on the side of the pitch with Lucozade bottle while they're doing an interview. Just try and get a little bit of extra exposure for Lucozade or wherever it would be. There are other drinks available, I think we know that.
But Carabao, of course.
Yes, of course. And it would have been in a pot for some sort of players pool sort of thing, and more often than not we would have tried to club that sort of money together and dish that out amongst staff and things like this around the team. And that's the way that it would have been. It wasn't a huge amount of money in comparison to what a lot of the players would have been earning, but it was something that was just in a bit of recognition for what they actually did for the team.
Gesture.
And that was I think they certainly most Premier League clubs would do that. And I know that, I believe it was Swansea did something. I think the Swansea players did something towards the back end of last season. I think even for the supporters and the staff, were basically, they paid for supporters to go up to the game towards the end of the season. But once they stayed up, you know, all in a pot, all in together, staff, they give the staff X amount of money. It was reported somewhere at some stage. And these are the sort of things that probably don't get as much publicity as they probably deserve at times.
Yeah, okay, very good. So we're going to take a short break, and straight after break, Philippe Auclair is going to talk to us about this situation at PSG between Cavani and Neymar and Alves. And it seems all the Brazilian contingent, who are very much on Neymar's side, and the manager is sitting on his hands. That's next.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Welcome back. The Irish women have beaten Northern Ireland 2-0 this evening. That's a full-time scoreline for you. And the latest in the football is in the Carabao Cup third round. Bournemouth and Brighton is 0-0. Aston Villa 0, Middlesbrough 2. We have Norwich beating Brentford 3-0. We have Bristol 2-0 up on Stoke. Bristol beating Stoke this evening.
Which Bristol, Lord Joe, this is a big thing in Bristol.
City.
You know that. You say Bristol, the Rovers fans or the City fans go mad.
Okay.
That's you've got to get that right.
Started a war there.
Yeah.
Leeds United 1-0 up away from home to Burnley. Crystal Palace, under new management under Roy, are 1-0 up against Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Well done, Roy Hodgson. West Ham are 2-0 up at home to Bolton. Wolves and Bristol Rovers are 0-0. Reading 0, Swansea City 1. Spurs at Wembley, 1-0 up against Barnsley. Spurs okay for the time being. Mm. And Kevin Coban, there has been another goal. Leicester City at home to Liverpool. It's now 2-0 Leicester City.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were going to go somewhere then. Yeah, Islam Slimani, what a goal, Joe. What a goal. He's had a bit of a dribble. He's coming inside from the right-hand side, inside right channel, and he's just gone on a bit of a maze. He's beat a couple of players along the maze, and he's on his left foot, and it's a little bit under his feet, and he just gets the perfect strike on your swinger. If it's on your bad foot, just try and get a good connection. Try and get your head over the ball and hit it deep, and it just rolls all the way into the top corner. Danny Ward, should I say, in goal for Liverpool. Absolutely no chance. Brilliant, brilliant strike from him. And fair play to him, taking it on as well, particularly on his left foot. Yeah, good goal.
The pass completion, or pass attempted stats would tell you this is a very quintessential Leicester performance. Liverpool 606 passes, yeah. Leicester just the 256. So yeah. Leicester have done what Leicester like doing to the big teams in particular.
You made an analogy before, it was quite interesting, you making the analogy to Andy Lee, saying about how do you look at games that sides dominate. You can look at it from Liverpool's point of view. Yeah, we've dominated the game, yet we haven't scored. First off, they did have two or three chances he should have scored. They weren't really clear cut. One chance for Oxlade-Chamberlain where he probably should have done better, but not really clear cut. They didn't really create an awful lot for all the possession that they had. Yet Leicester, you see with maybe the first goal, clinical when they were getting into position, sat in. You know, it's pretty much how we saw Leicester in the title winning season.
Yeah.
Sitting in, using the little pace they've got. Damari Gray's looked very good for them on the break in this match, and that's how they've won this game, or that's how they've put themselves in front in this game.
We're going to talk about Cavani and Neymar now. The front page of L'Equipe today has a picture of both with the headline, Le Clash. Philippe Auclair is on the line. Philippe, tell us about Le Clash.
I don't know if you've seen the images of what happened. It was rather funny and strange. Because, you know, a lot has been made about the penalty incident, but it was not the first incident during the game, because I think it was around just before the hour mark, there was a free kick, good free kick, about 25 yards from Lopez's goal. And Cavani obviously wanted to take it. And Dani Alves got the ball and pass it on to Neymar, which was the first sort of altercation. Alves afterwards said, "Oh, I wanted to, you know, to shoot it myself." Well, yeah, really, okay. And then 20 minutes later, that's the big incident when Kylian Mbappe was upended in the Lyon penalty box and Cavani took the ball, and Neymar clearly went to talk to him and basically demanding to get the ball, and Cavani said, "No way, I'm the one who kicks the penalties." And he kicked it. I mean, it was a fantastic save by Lopez, but you could say he missed it as well. And it was not the first time it had happened this season, because there had been a similar discussion in a previous game. But this time Cavani had scored. And you could say at the moment it's just one of these tiny things that the media in France, which are obsessed about PSG, are trying to, you know, to make a mountain of. But then what is more serious is what happened afterwards in the dressing room between the players immediately after the final whistle. And there, as we are led to understand, and believe me, the Parisian dressing room is one of the leakiest in the great clubs in Europe, there was a very, very, very animated discussion between Cavani and Neymar, in Spanish, of course. In which Cavani let it be known to Neymar what he thought of his attitude, and that there was one penalty taker at PSG, and it was Edinson Cavani, and it was that. And Neymar didn't take kindly, and apparently it took two of their teammates to separate them before they came to blows. So it's not very good, to say the least. It's not very good for the image of PSG, which is not the best-liked club in France, really. It's not good for their image in the rest of the world. And it's not good for the team itself, even though, you know, the results are fantastic so far. It's almost perfect in the French league. But obviously there is a definite problem between the two of the superstars, undoubted superstars of this Parisian team. I mean, I suppose you could expect that Neymar arriving with the price tag and the reputation and his rank of heir apparent to Messi and Ronaldo, that would upset the card with Cavani, whose record for PSG is frankly phenomenal, as it was for Napoli. Mm. I mean, you're talking about a guy who scored 49 in 50 games last year. It's just fantastic.
I was just going to say as well, jump in there, Philippe. Sorry, but it was. This is not a new thing. We've seen this, you know, for forever within football. Lads fighting on the pitch over penalties, free kicks. But what was quite notable around the first free kick, where Dani Alves grabbed the ball and shielded him. It's almost as if it's a show of power within that dressing room. And given what's happened over this summer with that transfer of Neymar, it seems to me like there'll only be one eventual winner with it, from this.
That's why I didn't like that one. I mean, the penalty rail, we've seen Lampard and Di Canio, and most players leave them to it and say, okay, two egos are clashing here. There was something so sly about Dani Alves picking up the ball.
Yeah.
People will have seen the image, I'm sure, and Cavani comes over expecting to take the free kick, and Alves doesn't even look at him. He has the ball under one hand and he's kind of half pushing Cavani away. And meanwhile, Neymar walks across screen and there's a perfect baton change. And it's ball into Neymar's hand, who neither of them will look Cavani in the eye. And I don't know, there was something really kind of malevolent about it. And I just thought, this is like bullying. And Cavani gave this almost resigned head to the side, kind of come on, you two. Are you really doing this in this way?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit hurt almost. And I, for one, was on Cavani's side from that moment on.
I think most people are. Because one of the primes that Cavani has, you talk about the power within the dressing room, the power is very much in the Brazilian camp. And when you look at the Parisian squad, of course, you've got six Brazilians now in it. You've got Maxwell, who is supposed to be the peacemaker, the guy who is trying to keep a good atmosphere in the dressing room. You've got Thiago Silva, you've got Marquinhos, you've got Lucas, whom everybody has forgotten about. You've got Alves, of course, and his best mate Neymar. So that's an awful lot of people for Cavani to deal with. There are rumors as well transpiring. I think they're extrapolations myself, to be honest. But there are rumors in Paris at the moment that Neymar's people have been making noises about the fact that Cavani's attitude was, there can only be one boss and it's got to be their guy, and Cavani should be offloaded perhaps as soon as January, which sounds to me completely impossible and ridiculous. And also the thing, I don't know how it strikes you, but I think Unai Emery, who is a manager who's, you know, of great talent and great capacity, I don't think he covered himself in glory either in this.
No, he didn't.
Because when he talked about it afterwards, and he was aware that there had been this discussion, altercation really, in the dressing room between the two players. And he said, it's up to the players to decide on the field of play. And I trust them, they're gentlemen. Come on, man. That is really worrying, because it shows that, in a way, he's there to coach a team, but he's also there to manage superegos, but not in the way that, say, a Carlo Ancelotti or an Alex Ferguson or Jose Mourinho would do, but very much somebody who is trying to find the zone of least conflict and enable them, let them go about doing this nonsense, which is detrimental to the team and detrimental to the club.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I was going to ask you about that. That was the next point I thought was very relevant here. So you've got this altercation on the pitch. What does the manager do about it? And it was the first real litmus test. We talked a couple of weeks ago, Philippe, about who would be the boss at PSG, Neymar or the manager. And it was the first real litmus test where Emery could have come out and been strong and said, well, I will decide who the penalty taker is. It's been Cavani. It will be Cavani until he has a run of misses. And he didn't do that. And if I'm Neymar and my bunch of Brazilian merry men, I'm thinking, actually, not only do we rule the dressing room, we kind of rule the manager here. And this whole club is ours for the taking.
Yeah, no, I quite agree. And Emery's position is in any case the position of any PSG manager, which is it's an ejector, permanent ejector seat. I know it's the same all across, you know, European football, but in PSG's case, because of the way the club is run, which is basically, it's run from Doha, it's run from Qatar, with somebody in Paris, who is the chairman, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, and his team are basically applying the orders they receive from the emir and the people around the emir. And so it's a very weird chain of conduct, which is, for example, very different from a club which is similar in as far as the project, which is Manchester City, where you've got the same objective, the same aim, which is soft power, which is publicity for a country and so forth, same methods, but which has got a completely independent football, a football cell, as it were. You know, when you know very much that Guardiola is the master and works with Begovic, Stan and Soriano and so forth, and also with and Randall Mubarak in Paris, you know that there is a vacancy of power, a genuine vacancy of power. So it's up for grabs. It's the manager, but it's the chairman. It's as long as the chairman is basically executing the orders coming from somebody else. It's not the manager, clearly. So should it be a player like Neymar? Mm. Should it be a coterie of players like the Brazilian club? I can't see how this is going to be beneficial for the club. And also, I can tell you, in France, it's not just the front page of L'Équipe. It's the back page of every paper I've looked at. It's the number one theme in all podcasts and radio programs and TV programs. Everybody's talking about that. It's so negative, the image that it projects on this club. So I think that makes Unai Emery's, I wouldn't call that cowardice, that would be far too strong a word.
Yeah.
But I would say he's sitting on the fence. Mm. That makes it all the more detrimental to the club because of the publicity, the adverse publicity that there's been around this. Honestly, nobody's talking about anything else. We were, you know, even yesterday I was on a program in France, and we were wondering, are there any equivalent elsewhere in Europe? And I was thinking of the scene which we saw at Watford, you know, when you saw Aguero and Sterling, but not arguing. That was a proper discussion, and the manager saying, yes, that's fine, which was almost like an illustration of camaraderie and team spirit. Mm. And we saw the exact opposite in the game against Lyon. And by the way, I don't know what your opinion of the game was, but they were poor PSG. They were nothing like the all swinging, all dancing team that we saw, you know, spank Celtic the other day. Nothing like that.
Well, that's maybe the point I was just going to come to then. Given the fact is that they've won 7 out of 7, including that Champions League game against Celtic, 26 goals scored, only 3 against. They are playing some sensational football up until the weekend. Now, you can start to make that argument that things could derail quite quickly there because of that then. And given that the fact is, you say, there's no leadership there, that could transfer or transmit around the whole ground then come the next few weeks.
Well, the problem is that it's very difficult to have means to read this properly because the French League being what it is, they are so far ahead of everybody else. It's a bit like having, you know, I was talking about Celtic.
Yeah.
You can't just Celtic, but what they're doing in the SPL, right? Because nobody comes close. Well, the same thing can be applied to the French League because the teams that did well last year, like Nice, you know, they're not firing on all cylinders this time around. Even Monaco hasn't been as convincing as they were. They've lost so many players anyway. And so they're in a bit of a desert. So what we're waiting for is perhaps the next big Champions League appointment for Paris Saint-Germain to have a clear idea of exactly how it has impacted the club and also what Cavani's response is going to be. Because he knows that a lot of the stories which will have been put in the papers today will have come from the Neymar camp. Yeah. This whole thing of he's got to be sold in January, you know, where does that come from? I'm looking at who has published that and who wrote the pieces, and I'm thinking, I think I've got a little idea of what it could be like. Gentle pressure, so to speak, being applied by one camp against the other.
This is really terrible then, because this is Cavani's career and he has performed excellently, and Neymar can just swoop in here into this Lord of the Flies type scenario, and Cavani is piggy and Emery won't defend him and nobody's going to stick up for him. So what kind of character is Cavani? I mean, it looked like he wanted to fight Neymar back, so he's not quite piggy in Lord of the Flies. What can he do here?
I, to be honest, I genuinely don't know. I don't know what he can do more. I've got the stats in front of me. I mean, I want to read them to you because people talk about Neymar and the Superman. Okay, these are the stats of a Superman. Napoli, 104 goals in 138 games. Paris Saint-Germain, 139 goals in 206 games. That is just monstrous. This guy was also, you know, he was playing at the time with Lavezzi and Hamzik, and he was playing with Zlatan and also Lavezzi. I mean, these are the stats of a truly top, top, top draw striker.
Add to that as well, the ultimate team player, given that Zlatan was playing there and he had to be shifted to the right-hand side for majority of that spell anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that suggests as well that he is that man that you actually want in your corner when you when you're up against as it is.
Yeah,
he's and he's very very tough. When he signed, I think in his first season, so that was 2013-14. When he signed for PSG, there were moments where honestly he wasn't that good. And Cavani is one of those instinctive goal scorers who is absolutely lethal when he has to react to a situation quickly. If you think, for example, at that unbelievable, you know, screwed header that he scored against Celtic, that there's how many players on the planet can score that? I don't know. It's just phenomenal. And he's not quite as good if he's, you know, going 1-1. He's got four touches of the ball. You know, it's very likely going to end up against the post or in Rosette. That's not the kind of player he is. But he's absolutely lethal. But he's got this character about him. He was criticized so harshly at the time. People were singing, what a waste of money. Quite a few papers and magazines were going, yeah, Paris Saint-Germain have spent far too much money on this guy. And he just knuckled down. And it just proved everybody wrong without saying a word, just by scoring goal after goal after goal. Mm. And I have to say, if I were, you know, he's only 30. So he's got there's a few years left in that tank of his. If things go badly at Paris Saint-Germain, I'm sure they will go very well somewhere else. Mm. I'm sure there will people be queuing, you know, outside his agent's door to bring him to their club. Mm. Honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting times, Philippe. Thanks so much for filling us in.
Thank you very much, guys.
There you go, Philippe Auclair with the latest from PSG. Interesting times in the Carabao Cup, the very latest. It's all going off between Burnley and Leeds United. So they're into the 6th minute of added time now. For most of this game, Leeds were 1-0 up. Well, from the 80th minute, not most of this game. 9 minutes later, Burnley get a penalty. Chris Wood equalises for Burnley.
Then his old club. Big move just recently.
Within a minute, a penalty for Leeds to go back 2-1 up. Pablo Hernandez scores. And within 30-40 seconds of that, Robbie Brady scored for Burnley. So it's 2-2 at Turf Moor. All going off there. Dele Alli has Spurs just the 1-0 up against Barnsley at Wembley. The big full-time scoreline, of course, this evening is that Leicester have beaten Liverpool full-time 2-0. Mm. Elsewhere, it's Stoke City 2-0 down to Bristol City. Middlesbrough 2-0 up away to Aston Villa, some of the scorelines. And West Ham now 3-0 up at home to Bolton. That's a full-time scoreline for you. Some text in as we go into the break. Largely centre in one thing. Why does Philippe ring from the Jacks? Says Dave. Is that French lad in the Jacks doing the interview? Is your man ringing from the gents cubicle, etc.? It's very echoey. Very echoey. We'll take a short break, back with our final thoughts in a moment.
Off the ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
We were talking Bayern last night with Raphael Honigstein, and it seems Ancelotti's time there, his days there are numbered. To what extent yet, we don't quite know. They're playing tonight. Richie mentioned earlier on they beat Schalke 3-0. James scored a goal.
And
Lewandowski scored as well.
Yeah, Lewandowski, I just actually noticed at the weekend as well, he's got the best goals per games ratio up to 100 games in the Bundesliga, or if you're 100 games in the Bundesliga, just overtook the great Rudi Völler at the weekend. So he's got 82 in 100 games, Rudi Völler 73 in 100 games. So it's not bad at all, is it, from him, given the time that he spent there in the Bundesliga, Robert Lewandowski. So tremendous from him, I think, really, yeah.
Tell you who doesn't have a shot conversion record to be too proud of at the moment. Liverpool, beaten tonight 2-0 by Leicester.
Yeah.
One goal from their last 56 efforts.
Is that right? A lot of their shots as well, Lord Joe, a lot of them are from distance. You know,
that's over their last two games.
They're having a lot of play, you know, till they get to the final third or around the penalty area, and they just, a lot of shots that are weak, you know, not even creating real clear-cut chances, you feel, as well. And it was quite noticeable towards the end of that game, as though we had it on the screen in front of us. Mm. Every time, any sort of breaking play, camera going to Jurgen Klopp on the bench. You know, when you start to know that little bit of pressure's building on a manager, certainly quite noticeable after that result tonight, yeah.
Everton. We wanted to talk to you about Everton. So, this thing is starting to snowball a bit for them. The results have been terrible. Beaten 4-0 by Manchester United at the weekend.
Yeah.
Although they were in the game for large spells. The general analysis afterwards was that Rooney was way too deep, totally isolated. They were never really much of a threat, but
It wasn't a 4-0 hammering as such, but still, in the context of the whole season, it doesn't look good. Atalanta beat them 3-0. Spurs at Goodison 3-0 was a real hammering.
Yeah.
To the point where at certain moments, Spurs would create chance after chance after chance. And it got to a point where the crowd at Goodison were booing as Harry Kane put a ball wide.
Yeah.
Like, close him down kind of a thing. Like, this is not good enough kind of a thing. Chelsea beat them 2-0 before that. So their last four games, played four, lost four, no goals scored, 12 goals conceded.
Yeah, minus 8 in the league as well so early on this season, Joe. Only that one win against Stoke. And I think the issues that he's finding, and we spoke about this so often over the last couple of years, I suppose, is how Liverpool replaced Luis Suarez, the amount of signings that went into the club, how Tottenham replaced Gareth Bale. And you can actually make that argument here now with Everton, how they've replaced Romelu Lukaku, the signings that they've brought in. I think everybody thought, yeah, they've done really good business. Ronald Koeman has switched between a back three and a back four for Everton this season. He doesn't seem to have settled on which system he's going to use. He used a back four against Atalanta last week, back four against Tottenham, but he's used a back three against Chelsea, Man United and Man City. Where I mean, City, yeah, they got a good result, but City, with that, if they had 10 men, you would think that City would have gone and won it. So he's spoken as well, Ronald Koeman, this week about the need for patience, certainly with one or two of the players, particularly Michael Keane. He spoke about he needs to find his position within our side and get used to if we're going to play with this back three. But the main two I feel that have probably failed to deliver is Klaassen, one of them, because David Klaassen coming in from Ajax, he's not necessarily been able to really replicate the form that he's shown in Ajax. And Ramirez up front, Ramirez certainly looked way off it. I spoke about him the other week when I saw him at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. He looked...
How so?
Just movement. You know, if I'm putting him in comparison, the strikers we've been speaking about recently in Morata and all these sort of lads. Now, he might not be on that level, but you've got to be giving Everton something that if you're going to get Rooney into a game, if you're going to get a Klaassen, if you're going to get... who's the boy they got from Swansea? Lose me head now.
Sigurdsson.
Yeah, Sigurdsson. If they're going to get these players into the game, they need to be having a striker that is doing selfless running. And I talk about it so often strikers, and Ramirez was doing this constantly throughout that game, kept on coming to the ball. His touch was letting him down. He didn't seem great to me with his back to play. Now, again, I'm only judging him on one game. But the position you're playing as that lone striker, particularly when you've got those sort of players in your side, you just need to be doing selfless running off the ball. Those players, your Rooneys, your Sigurdssons, your Klaassens, all these players, when you've got them in the side, will find you, will create chances for you. But Everton just don't seem to get the pattern or the system of the side right yet. There seems to be no functions where they play. They don't seem to function correctly. Three or a back four, it's not working for Everton. And Koeman has problems certainly in the immediate terms, because he needs to get this right, and he's got to start picking up the results. Now, bearing in mind, they've probably got a few winnable results, and up until the Merseyside derby on December 10th, which is away at Anfield, they only play Arsenal out of the top six. So they've got certainly winnable games. Burnley, Brighton over the next couple of weeks in between Leon. They've got a couple of games against Leon. Leicester away. So they've got games now where they need to start picking up these points. They're in the bottom three at the moment, and they are struggling, as I said, with the results. So they need a big turnaround.
Is Koeman under pressure for his job suddenly?
Given what he spent, probably a little bit too early, but I just think it's alarming how they're shipping the goals. Koeman's sides haven't done that. They did it last season, and I spoke about it the other week with the addressed issues from a defensive point of view that Roberto Martinez wasn't able to address and wasn't able to get right. So he's got that right. Mm-hmm. The one thing that Everton probably needed to was maybe just become a little bit more adventurous, and that's why Koeman has spent the money and brought these players in. Didn't get that number nine. They needed a striker. That was the one big sign they need to come in to maybe put all this squad of players that they've got together now right. So if they can get that supposed looking in towards January, yes, but they are way off it at the moment. And I thought they might be able to put in a bit of a challenge there certainly for top six. I still even think top four would be on them because of what's been spent by those top four clubs. And I think if they could break that top six and getting around there, then they'd be on the right sort of path over the next few years. It's just not happened for them.
No. It is a very difficult thing when you lose your main attacking force. So take the Liverpool example with Suarez or Spurs and Gareth Bale. You do have all this money, and inevitably you spend it on lots of different players. there's just a shortage of genius attacking players.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard. You feel like you've got safety in numbers as the season's about to kick off, and then it turns out you don't. Quick fire game. We can judge between Spurs and Liverpool who spent the big chunk of change they got for Bale and Suarez respectively best. So
yeah.
Here we go for Bale. 85 million in 2013 euro, though it turns out it was a bit more than that.
Yeah, I think it was 100, wasn't it? I think.
Well,
yeah.
Don't tell Ronaldo.
Yeah.
He didn't like that.
Yeah.
So the big success story of all the players they got Paulinho for 17 million from Corinthians. That was just a waste.
Yeah.
I mean, that was 17 million sterling.
Barcelona player now, Joe.
Wow. Well, didn't work out for whatever reason.
No.
So I'll run through the others. Chadli for 7 million. Soldado for 26 million.
I know.
Eriksen for 11.5 million.
Yeah.
Lamella for 30 million.
Yeah.
Eriksen's the big success story there.
Most definitely. Probably the only... We've not seen enough of Lamella. Lamella, he had a good spell of games season before last, didn't he? And he looked better. I have to say he looked better, certainly with Pochettino going in there. But Eriksen's certainly the value for money out of that. And Eriksen at first, you can't forget that he struggled to adjust. If I'm looking at it in relation to where Davy Klaassen has come from, both coming from Ajax, that's maybe backing up what Ronald Koeman's saying, that look, these lads might need a bit of chance. I think he actually used Eriksen as the analogy. I think it was in the Echo today in Liverpool, just to say, look at Eriksen, look what he did. We need to maybe give this lad time. But Eriksen's probably, out of those signings, you're right, Eriksen's the only one.
Lamella for 30 million in 2013. That's about 85 million in today's money.
Yeah, it's true.
So Liverpool then, they lost Suarez for 75 million euro a year later. They brought in 9 players. Ricky Lambert, £4 million. Emre Can, £10 million.
Yeah.
Not bad.
You know, I like Can. I think Can's a good player. I think he's got chance, yeah.
Lallana, £25 million, has grown into that, you could say?
Yeah.
Okay. Markovic for £20
million. It's not worked out, has it?
Dejan Lovren for £20
million. Well, it's not. I don't see anything from Lovren that suggests that he's been value for money, no.
Origi for £10
million. Yeah, he's done okay, hasn't he?
I mean, he's £10 million. He spent £10 million. Fine. Moreno for £12 million. He hasn't quite grown into the fullback they were hoping. And
no.
Then Mario Balotelli for £16 million brings the total spend up to £117 million sterling. It's a very difficult thing to do. Everton have fallen into this exact trap, it seems.
Yeah, it is. It's spending, you know, replacing so many, replacing one guy with so many on the face of it, and we'd all think, yeah, they've done good business. But
feels good. You look around the training ground, you see all these players.
Yeah, new signings.
You probably lost somewhere between 20 and 40% of your goals.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing, isn't it? And we spoke about it with Bale. I remember speaking about it with Suarez as well. And of course, we spoke about it now. We're speaking about it with Lukaku, given what he's doing at Man United. It's a huge, huge one to replace. Where can they get that 25 goals that he's scoring last year in the Premier League? Where can they replace that? And you spread it around and you think you're going to get a bit of creativity, but Everton have got no pace in the team. And
that was the point they made on Match of the Day 2 this Sunday just gone.
Oh, were they?
The ball going to Rooney was too deep and they wanted runners from midfield to go beyond them.
And
no one had the pace to do it.
Totally.
And when Manchester United had the ball, or when it was in Everton's half, United defenders weren't just on their own halfway line, they were 15 yards inside the Everton half. They were so unworried about Everton's
pace. That is clear. I didn't see much today, so but you're right in saying that. Yeah,
we're pretty much done. We've got to go. You can podcast. There was lots of good stuff on the show this evening. Andy Lee was excellent on the boxing. Cor Staunton, I promise you, was well worth a listen. She was really brilliant. And we had Ewan McKenna and Sean Kelly talking about the Dubs and all the money the Dubs have. We will see you tomorrow. Tom Dunn on the way next.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.